Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/Watson Assistant.
This is DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg.
It is a Friday. We're in the midst of the NFL draft, round one. Of course, we got to watch and isolate it, and it was, I don't know, guys, I thought it was wonderful. We'll get to the Jets and the Giants in just a moment, but Chris, just having football and seeing Goodell and watching the guys celebrate at home, I really enjoyed last night, just from a pure football perspective.
Now, Dave, does this count as a football Friday?
Yes.
Okay. I was just checking. I mean, typically we only get that in the fall, but because it's the NFL draft and there's really nothing else going on, I think we should just go ahead and tab this as a football Friday officially.
I think you make a good point. I think it is a football Friday. And, I thought there was something really fun about last night. It's been so long since we've had, and I enjoyed The Last Dance, and we all did, and we dissected it. It was really well done. And I look forward to episodes 3 and 4 this Sunday night, but this was the closest we've had to sports, to competition, to not knowing what's going to happen in 6 weeks. Honestly, I'm being sincere, Chris, this was the most I've enjoyed a draft ever just because I'm so needy for sports right now.
Well, I mean, listen, we talked about it going in, right? Because there was nothing else going on. This is actually something that you can look at, and it gives you a little bit of a glimpse into what we can expect when NFL season actually resumes, when we actually get to see football on the field. So this provides a little bit of a hope in terms of us getting back to some normalcy, and a big part of our way of life is being able to watch live sports. So yeah, we knew that we were going to be, you know, entertained for the 3.5 hours that the draft was on. But I mean, last night's draft was relatively uneventful. You know, I thought that we would see a lot more movement from teams, especially in the top half of the first round, and it just didn't play out that way. I think a lot of people were trying to feel their way out, and you saw some trades happen once we got into the second half of the first round. But it was a relatively quiet night in terms of fireworks at the top.
Yeah, we thought there might be a lot of deals. We made our projections. We'll get into that a little bit later. But there were not a ton of deals, especially in the top 10. There were no deals. And, Rick, why do I feel like your house and the Vrabel house might have a lot of similarities going on?
Very similar. I mean, what you saw in the background is pretty much how I spend most of my mornings. I mean, that's pretty much where I get a lot of my work done. So I wouldn't have been, I mean, if I was at Vrabel's house, that's probably where I would have been. It was exactly where that guy was sitting on the toilet.
That was wonderful. I mean,
school
Belichick,
toilet, whatever it was.
Belichick looked like he was coming out of a 1975 TV show.
Well, that's his Nantucket home. That's where he resides in the offseason.
I know, but it's
understated.
I'll tell you what's not understated.
Jerry Jones mega yacht. Oh, that's not understated at all.
No, prestige worldwide. I mean, he's like an evil villain making his picks in his yacht. I'll tell you what. I mean, we'll go through the teams and what San Francisco did and the winners and losers and everything else. The biggest winner of last night, I'm telling you right now, Cliff Kingsbury's sex life. I mean, what he's working with in Arizona. Not only did they get Isaiah Simmons, did you see where he was set up?
Yeah, it was unbelievable. It looked like a movie set. But here's the thing, though. We'll get into the Jets and Giants in a second.
Like 50 Shades of Grey.
Yeah, absolutely. 800-919-3776. But here's the thing, and this is why I'm not sure how legitimate. Obviously, it's a beautiful home. They said it was 97 degrees yesterday in Arizona. He's got the fire going outside.
Ambiance, Dave. It's all about ambiance.
That's what it's about?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Set the mood.
Well, Dave. I'm guaranteeing well. Right now there was a naked woman in his bed. I promise you that.
and if she wasn't, she was about to be.
Well, all right. So let's get through it. And I have some strong statements. Now, Giants make their pick, and we had said offensive line is the way that we think the Giants should go. We all agreed with that. And, you know, we thought Wirfs or Wills would probably be the guy. Didn't think it would be Becton. We weren't sure about Thomas. But this vitriol surrounding the Giants and what they did last night, we'll start with you, Rick. I don't understand. I mean, they rated him as the top offensive lineman in the draft. They love him. And for people to flip out about it, I just think is really unfair.
Yeah, it's unfair. Here's what I do like, and I think this is what Giants fans and even Jets fans should appreciate, is the fact that not one person that covers the Giants, I think we all realized, or we all hoped at least, that it would be an offensive lineman, it would be a tackle. The fact that it never leaked out that Andrew Thomas was going to be the guy, that, I mean, and listen, Jordan Renan, I mean, between his, you know, his contacts and everything else, he was convinced it was going to be Wirfs or Wills. So the fact that they kept it quiet, I think that says something about you know, how this team is going to be run in the influence of having Joe Judge now.
And this was really the first time that Dave Gettleman has kept a secret about what he wanted to do with his first pick. A couple of years ago when they were drafting Saquon Barkley, like, you knew that they were probably leaning toward Barkley because of how Dave Gettleman waxed poetically about him in the pre-draft process. Same thing with Daniel Jones. After he saw him at the Senior Bowl, he was full-blown love. So, I mean, this was the first time when you really didn't hear anything about what direction Dave Gettleman was potentially going to go in. But as far as the player is concerned, I don't understand why anybody would be negative about the pick. We identified offensive tackle as the biggest position of need just because it's what's most important to the organization. The development of Daniel Jones, making sure that he gets his pro career on track, is the most important thing for the Giants right now. And so this pick signals that the Giants understand that, which gives me a little bit of confidence in what the organization is trying to do moving forward.
You know what it felt like? It felt like, and Dave, I texted you this last night. I mean, it was like when your parents take you out for dessert and they tell you, okay, you're going to have ice cream. Like, the choice is ice cream. Now you just get to pick your favorite flavor. And for the Jets, it was Becton. And for the Giants, it was Thomas. I think the real interesting thing is it feels like, I mean, with what you've seen from Andrew Thomas, I mean, they clearly, I mean, left tackle is what they want. They want to protect Daniel Jones' blind side. He's got the most experience there. He's got, I mean, from everything you heard and read, he's got the highest floor. And then with Becton, it seems like there are some questions with the, you know, flag drug test and, you know, the weight and everything else. But
not to mention what his girl put on Instagram last night. We'll get into that
later.
Yeah,
which wasn't great. But, I mean, he's got the highest ceiling. So it's almost like, you know, opposite ends of the spectrum. Highest floor and, you know, taking a bit of another, I wouldn't say a risk. I mean, there was the four offensive linemen. I probably would have rathered Wills, but that's just me. But at his size and the fact that Joe Douglas comes from Baltimore and Philadelphia, we probably should have connected the dots when you start looking at the size of their left tackle. I mean, between Peters, Jonathan Ogden, I mean, they're
yep.
big physical
he
guys.
He loves the big offensive lineman, yeah.
And this dude's humongous. I mean, you're talking about a guy who's 6'7", who ran a 5'1 in the 40. So, he's a freakish athlete, too.
Freakish athlete, yeah. And let's line up the phone calls, get your reactions to it. 800-919-3776. Jordan Renan at 11, Rich Cimini at 12. So we'll break down from each side of things. But, Chris, I guess... Here's the way I take it. People are so frustrated with the Giants, and you know I am as well, and I was freaking out about getting nervous about Derek Brown and all these things. I just think if you're the person, and there's a lot of people, and you saw it on social media yesterday, and people were texting me right away how unhappy they are. If you're that person that the Giants take what they deem to be, and it's not like they're on an island here. We've had plenty of people tell us. I mean, Renan said he wouldn't be surprised if they took Thomas. Mike Tenenbaum said he's absolutely his favorite of the offensive linemen. Schefter tweeted last night that there's a groundswell of people around the NFL that think he's absolutely terrific. So if you're of the mindset, and most of the people that are going to critique it and analyze it don't even know exactly what they're talking about, but if you're of that mindset, I think it's more because of what the Giants have done in the past than how you feel about this actual selection.
Well, I think it's more about what they're hearing in the pre-draft process, Dave, and what all the scouts are talking about, whether it's Daniel Jeremiah or Lewis Riddick, whatever those individuals are putting out there, that's what people that are fans of the Jets and the Giants are using to formulate their opinions of it. So, I mean, they're not watching all of the games of these offensive tackles, so they don't know. But they're basing their opinion off of what they're hearing, and all you've heard in the pre-draft process was buzz about Tristan Wirfs, about Jedrick Wills, and about Mekhi Becton and how he ran a 5-1 at the combine. You really hadn't heard a lot of fanfare for Andrew Thomas, but what he is a solid football player. I mean, you're talking about a guy that was a 3-year starter in the SEC. He's got experience at right tackle, but played more games at left tackle. Last night, the SEC set a conference record for number of players drafted in the first round. It was 15 players. The SEC is basically a developmental league for the NFL. And the fact that this guy is a 3-year starter at tackle in that level of competition, that should give you a little bit of confidence about what's walking into the door at 1925 Giants Drive. The fact that the guy has played a lot of left tackle, more left tackle than any of the other guys selected in the first round last night, I mean, that's the thing that the Giants are looking at. This clearly signals to me that Dave Gettleman understands this is probably going to be the last year for Nate Solder. And after this season, Andrew Thomas is probably going to slide over to play left tackle, and you'll figure out the right tackle situation long term down the road. But as far as what they did, I don't know how you could be critical of it right now.
Well, I think you're critical because you didn't, I mean, you haven't heard anything about Andrew Thomas. I mean, to your point, I mean, you usually take your cues off of, you know, all the mock drafts, you know, Mel Kiper's, you know, Todd McShay, you know, shout out to Todd McShay. Hope he's feeling better. Unfortunate, the timing of him dealing with COVID-19. That's kind of how you take your cues. I mean, you're listening to the Jordan Renans. You're breaking down mock drafts, and the fact that, you know, I just think we got into a situation, especially under the circumstances, with no pro days, kind of not as much chatter, not as many rumors, is that I think it was another situation where, you know, how the media saw it was a little bit different than how people inside of football saw it.
Yes.
And how much respect there was for Andrew Thomas, not only as a player, but as far as, you know, Andrew Thomas, the person. You know, everything I've heard about him is, the kind of kid he is. He's a really clean prospect, which is, I'm sure, something that, you know, Joe Judge really liked.
Pro Football Focus has a little stat about him. New Giants offensive tackle Andrew Thomas, Rick, hasn't allowed more than two pressures in a single game since 2017. And Sal Powell had a report last night. He said this has Joe Judge written all over it. He said, I don't know if you saw, he says he loved Andrew Thomas. He wanted them to take him. He kind of pushed for him to be taken. And did you see the conversation they had? He said, before you meet the media, here's the thing. I don't want to hear you mention Super Bowl. I want you to go out there and say how you can get better and how excited you are to be a Giant. And that's it. That's all I want to hear from you.
Well, yeah, I mean, you have to manage expectations from the fan base, and you also have to set the right tone about what your program is going to do and how it's going to be implemented. I think that's what Joe Judge is prioritizing. It doesn't do anybody any good for you to jump out there and start talking about Super Bowls right now. Everybody that's a fan of the organization, that covers the organization, they know that it's going to be a long road for the Giants to build it back to the point where you're competing consistently at the highest level. So it doesn't make any sense to go out there talking about it. The goal of winning a Super Bowl is obvious for every organization, but there's a process that you have to go through in order to accomplish that. And I like the head coach saying that to his first draft pick because it sets the right tone and it shows what Joe Judge is really going to be about. The fact that they're going after a guy that not only has a lot of productivity on the field, but that has that kind of character, that just tells you what Joe Judge wants his team to be about. And I think that's going to move the Giants closer to where we want them to be.
Yeah, I think you set the tone early. And as far as Andrew Thomas is concerned, I mean, as far as the offensive lineman taken in the first round, I mean, from everyone that I've talked to, he's the most NFL ready.
Yes. Like
he's a plug and play kind of guy from day one.
Well, yeah, because he played a lot in the SEC, Rick. I mean, DeBrickashaw Ferguson was the fourth overall pick for the Jets a little over a decade ago. And one of the things that people said about him when he was coming out was that he was a starter from the first day he stepped on campus. I mean, you had 4 years of watching him play at a high level in the ACC. I guess similar to what we got with Andrew Thomas. He's not a guy that's going to overwhelm you in terms of his size or his play strength, but he's going to be technically sound. He's fundamentally solid at the position, and even though he might not have the ceiling of a Becton or a Wirfs or a Wills, you know that he's probably got a higher floor than all those guys, especially if you're talking about wanting to play him at left tackle. Because when you start talking about the other three guys that were lumped in as the best offensive tackle prospects, you're projecting all of those guys playing left tackle. Most of the time that they had playing at the collegiate level was at right. That's not the case for Andrew Thomas.
Yeah, I mean, and what was he? He was All-American as a freshman, right?
Yep.
Right. I mean, right off the bat in 2017?
Yep.
So, I mean, he's the pedigree is there. He went up against, and I saw, is it Kirby Smart is the coach of Georgia?
Yeah, Kirby Smart.
Yeah, he was on.
Who was at Alabama, by the way?
Right. He was on, I don't know, sorry, I can't even keep him straight at this point. Something either last night or this morning. He said, they asked, is this 10 years left tackle? He said, no, he's not. He's 12 to 14 years left tackle. He said, you can put him there day one. And do not have to worry. He said, I'm telling you, he's gone up against the best of the best. He's done well against every single guy he's gone up against. Again, you can have your opinion. My only point, Rick, is I hope that if you have your opinion that you don't like to pick, that it's a formulated opinion and it's well formulated. Because if not, I don't want to hear about it.
Yeah, but I understand why you would not like the pick. Unless
but you didn't see all over the place. I mean, people were freaking out about it last night.
Well, that's because every mock draft you saw had Giants fans excited about Isaiah Simmons and the versatility. So, I mean, I get it. If you wanted a defensive player because your defense stinks and you felt like Isaiah Simmons should have been the guy, then you could be a little bit disappointed. But if you were expecting offensive line and that's what you wanted, you can't be upset about it. I mean, let's not forget too. I mean, earlier on in this process, like really, really early on in this process, the best, I mean, when you look at the early mock drafts, the best available offensive lineman was going to be Andrew Thomas.
Mm-hmm.
He was the number one guy for a while. And then all of a sudden it started to change a little bit. But again, listen, we're not as qualified. I know there's some, you know, people that have jobs in the NFL, the NHL, the NBA, Major League Baseball that aren't really great at them. But for the most part, they're the most qualified people to make these decisions. And if they think that Andrew Thomas was the best available offensive lineman, then that's who it's going to be. I mean, offensive line is not sexy. Let's not get it twisted. It's not the sexiest pick. But I mean, as a Jets fan, go back and anyone you ask, you know, what's the most successful Jets draft we've had in a long time? It was the one where they took DeBrickashaw and Nick Mangold. I mean, that was a really successful draft that set the Jets up to have a ton of success.
It's hard to win in this league if you don't have good offensive linemen. That's it. Blanket
statement. Well, you only talk about it when you don't have it. Well, you talk about it when you don't have it, and you complain about it when you don't have it. Otherwise, you take it for granted when you do.
Look at the teams that did well this year. Niners had a good offensive line. The Chiefs had a good offensive line. The Titans had a good offensive line. I mean, the Texans traded two number ones to get an elite offensive lineman. You have to have good offensive line in this league to win. That's it, period.
No question about it, Dave. And if you have a good offensive line that's going to help Daniel Jones, that's going to help Saquon Barkley, if Giants fans are upset they didn't go with the defensive player at four, think about it this way. That offensive lineman is going to help that offense be better with the ground game control time of possession, which means your defense is not going to be on the field as long. Your defense is not going to be exposed. I think that this move makes sense on a lot of different levels. Andrew Thomas is going to make Daniel Jones and Saquon Barkley that much better. And right now, that's what you should be concerned with, because that is the future of your team for the next 3, 4, 5 years. So that's what Giants fans should look at when they're trying to evaluate this pick. I think this was the only direction for Big Blue to go in.
And by the way, Andrew Thomas will be on the K Show today at 4:00. Mekhi Becton 3:30. Adam Schefter on Barton Hahn at 1:30 today. Go ahead, Rick.
Dave, let's be completely honest too. And I hate to say this because I don't want to rain on your parade, but again, I think we know where the Giants are at. When you look at where the Eagles are at, what the Eagles just added, what the Cowboys just did, I mean, how bad your defense is that you're probably not going to win a ton of games, but if you are going to win games, it's going to be because you can score points.
It's an arms race in the NFC East, no question about it. It really is. Plus, you're going to need that offensive tackle to be pretty good, because I'm not sure if everybody paid attention to what the Redskins did with the second overall pick, but they added Chase Young to Montez Sweat, Ryan Kerrigan, Deron Payne, and Jonathan Allen. You're going to need a solid offensive line to contend against the defensive lines you're going against.
Look, Giants go fourth tonight. I don't know what they'll do, but if you told me you took the best center available, I wouldn't be upset about that even a little bit.
No, Dave, I mean, listen, you can turn a unit that was a weakness for the better part of this decade into a unit that's a strength for this team for the foreseeable future. I mean, how awesome would it be if you're talking about the Giants having three starters on your offensive line under the age of 25?
Be great.
That would be awesome. I mean, that's what you want. And especially when you're trying to develop a young quarterback, that's a unit that can grow with him. I mean, offensive linemen, if you hit on them, those guys are going to be around, you know, 8 to 10 years. So to me, it makes a lot of sense. And Dave Gettleman has talked about his football philosophy and the hog mileage and all of that stuff. We saw him put draft capital on the defensive line, but now we're starting to see him add significant draft capital on the offensive line. You had Will Hernandez a couple of years ago. Now you got Andrew Thomas. I just feel like it's moving in the right direction.
All right, let's go to some of the calls. 800-919-3776. We're really getting to the Jets selection as we move forward here as well. Renan at 11 o'clock, Samini at 12. We'll run through the entire first round from last night. A lot to do, a very busy football Friday for us and you, Chris, here on 98.7 ESPN. Let's go to Bruce in Manhattan. Bruce, lead us off. You're on 98.7 ESPN.
Hey, guys. First thing I want to say is that three guys in a football booth doesn't work, but you three together are a perfect combination. You all bring different things to the table. I think you're the best listener on the radio.
Wow, that's very nice. Thank you.
Sure. What I wanted to say is, of course, we heard the most about the other three tackles, but we heard virtually nothing about Andrew Thomas. All of the draft experts also felt that the other three were better choices. It's you guys seem to be very high on this choice. I'm high on the choice of a tackle, but it's the safest choice isn't always the best choice. So I'm my question is, and you've answered it in your way, but why him above each one of the other three?
Because he was their favorite. I mean, you're going off of what you read and what was being, you know, mocked up in drafts. I mean, no one really knew. And I love the fact that no one knew who they thought the best offensive lineman was. They want at some point, if it's not this year, to be next year, for Andrew Thomas to step in and be your left tackle for the next, you know, 10 to 12 years. And he has the most experience at left tackle. He's had the most success at left tackle. I mean, he played at Georgia, going up against the best pass rushers in college football, and has had a ton of success. The fact that we haven't been talking about him, I mean, that's just because all of a sudden you started to hear buzz after the combine with, you know, Wirfs and what you saw from Wills, and then, you know, having a guy 6'7", 364 pounds, run a 5'1", 40. Here's the interesting thing, though. When you look at this year's draft and you break this thing down 3 to 5 years from today, this may end up being one of those drafts where you got a lot less failure than in the past, because this is strictly, you know, based more on what you've seen on their tape, as opposed to, you know, the kind of groupthink and being like overwhelmed with all the physical gifts and the underwear Olympics and everything else.
Yeah, I mean, Andrew Thomas is a safe pick from the standpoint that you've seen him do what you're going to ask him to do in the NFL at the collegiate level, at the highest level right. In college football.
Right.
So I think that's really what it comes down to. Like, for me, if you look at where the Giants went and where the Jets went with their pick, that's on opposite ends of the spectrum if we're talking about the offensive linemen that were available. To me, Andrew Thomas is the base hit. Mekhi Becton is swing for the fences and hope you hit a home run. Like, to me, that's how I see these two players. But as far as what the Giants are doing, I thought that this was a safe pick. And yeah, Andrew Thomas is not going to wow you. I don't think his ceiling is as high as the other three guys that were lumped into that group. But I believe that he has a higher floor. And for the New York Giants, that's exactly what you're looking for. You want as many solid football players as you can possibly find. We keep talking about how the Giants roster is so top heavy and how they don't have a lot of depth. This gives them an opportunity to have a solid to good offensive tackle for the next decade. And I don't know how you can turn down the opportunity to have that if you're Dave Gettleman.
Let's go to Mike in Parsippany. Mike, you're next up on 98.7.
Guys, good morning. How you doing?
What's going on, Mike?
Not too much. Hey, you guys seem to criticize Dave Gettleman a lot for his draft picks. I think his last couple, you know, other than picking Saquon where we did, and I think it was more about changing the complexion of the Giants with Odell Beckham to Saquon Barkley, I think his draft picks have panned out. I think they've been pretty solid. I mean, do you guys agree or no?
No.
Fine.
Mike, we don't agree. I mean, 3 years ago when you took a running back with the second overall pick, you didn't think that you were going to be a 5-win team. You took Saquon Barkley because you thought, hold on, Mike, I'll let you talk. You took Saquon Barkley because you thought that you were capable of making another playoff push in the twilight of Eli Manning's career. And then they realized that they weren't going anywhere fast, which is why the organization decided to pivot. But you can't sit here and tell me that that was the right decision. I mean, even though Saquon is a phenomenal player, you've burned 2 seasons of his career at the position in the NFL that probably has the shortest shelf life. That wasn't the right move.
No. As evidence, by last night, when you don't have a running back, don't go to 32, and you get stud running backs going to be available in the littered throughout the second round. Go ahead, Mike.
Yeah, listen, here's the thing, though, too. I mean, if you're going to draft a running back in the first round, I mean, you do it when you're the Kansas City Chiefs. That's when you do it. You do it with the last pick in the first round.
Yes, yes.
That's when you do it.
Was it his decision or ownership saying, Eli, give him one more chance? What do you guys?
It doesn't matter. He took the job with the understanding that ownership wanted him to go in that direction. If Dave Gettleman wanted to completely tear it down and move on from Eli Manning, he probably wasn't going to be the general manager. But since he did take the job, I am going to evaluate the moves based on what he does. I can care less about ownership and what they want to do because they're not going to change. But if your general manager doesn't do the job that they asked him to do, which is to actually produce in the way of wins, then I can be critical of him. And Dave Gettleman in his first couple of years as the Giants GM has a grand total of 9 wins. How can we say that Dave Gettleman has done a great job? Even the owner came out and said that Dave Gettleman needs to do a better job. How are we wrong for criticizing him?
And Mike, do you like what they've done in free agency?
I think the Leonard Williams thing was kind of BS. I think that was a stupid move, giving up what
they did. It was a terrible move. Do you like the Patrick Omame signing? I mean, you a fan of that? Do you like, I mean, Nate Solder? I mean, listen, and I understand you might have been forced into Nate Solder, but there's not a lot of free agents that he's brought in that you love. I think the draft, he's been okay. I think free agency has been bad. Overall, Rick, I don't think he's done a very good job in 2+ years here with the Giants.
Yeah, but here's the thing, and here's where I agree with the caller, is that I do think it was a mandate from ownership, was to try to win with Eli Manning. Here's where I'll criticize him a little bit. Knowing that going in, and that's the reason why you get the job, and most GMs don't get a second opportunity, is it's how now all of a sudden you choose to take what the owner told you to do and now put that into motion. So are you better served using the second overall pick on a running back, or are you better served trading down and addressing the offensive line with like a Quentin Nelson? Or the edge pass rush with a Bradley Chubb. It's like how you decide, you know, how are we gonna take Eli Manning where he's at in his career and get the best out of him? I would make the argument that you need to protect him. So I'd focus more on the offensive line. And if that meant, you know, trading down from 2 to do exactly what the Colts did and get Quentin Nelson and a couple other picks, I mean, that's probably what I would have done. That's where you start to criticize him. I mean, you can be told to do something, and it's now on you how you decide you want to get that done.
And the Colts got 2 starters on their offensive line as a result of that move. Quentin Nelson and Braden Smith.
Yeah, and they got Darius Leonard in that draft, too.
Yep.
The Giants could have traded down, gotten Quentin Nelson, and loaded up on draft picks. And another thing from last night is I've seen them all over the place. Why did they not trade down? You know they wanted to trade down. I'm sure Thomas would have been there at 6 or 7. My assumption is, we'll talk to Renan at 11 o'clock, Chris, is that they could not trade back. That there was no one that was willing to give anything to move up to the 4 spot.
Well, I think that's really what it came down to. And Lions general manager Bob Quinn came out and said that there was some chatter around the 3rd overall pick, but a real offer never materialized. So if that was what happened at 3, I think it's safe to assume that's probably what happened at 4. And we were thinking that one of those 2 teams, whether it was the Dolphins or the Chargers, would want to move into the top 5. But that just didn't happen. They were comfortable sitting where they're at and letting the quarterbacks fall to them. So, yeah, if you're not going to get a real offer in terms of being able to get close to fair value for the pick, then it made sense to stay there and take your guy, Andrew Thomas. Why run the risk of your guy being taken by somebody else before you get on the clock?
Probably the hardest working man in the world right now, and that is Jordan Renan joins us here. Of course, beat reporter for the New York Football Giants. Good morning, Jordan. How are you?
Good morning. Yeah, Dave, you were up pretty late last night, too, for sure. You texted me in who knows what hours.
Not only was I up late last night, but I decided to start watching the end of Hunters last night at like 1:30 in the morning. So I was up very, very late. But that's conversation for a different day. All right, so let's get into it. Your take on what the Giants did 4th overall is?
Positive. I mean, we've talked about this. It was about protecting the investment in Daniel Jones and Saquon Barkley, right? And they did that. They took the guy that they thought was the best offensive tackle. I mean, I don't know how people sit there and they're going to nitpick which offensive tackle, because we've talked about this also from the start, is that these guys were all closely rated. It depends on who you talk to. Number 1 is number 4 on some people's boards. Number 4 is number 1 on some people's boards. So I've talked to personnel evaluators and they had Andrew Thomas as number 1. So the fact that he came atop the Giants board, I don't think should be a huge surprise to anyone, or should everyone should be like, this guy can't play, he's not going to be any good. That, to me, is kind of ridiculous. What I did notice, and that the Giants really liked about him, and I think this sort of set him over the top, they liked his length, right? And that's a big thing with offensive tackles, arm length. 36 1/8-inch arms, that was tied for 2nd among all the offensive tackles. I think that partially helps set him apart from the rest of the guys.
Yeah, it's what you like. Length, girth, whatever it ends up being. I mean, that's what you decide. Jordan, I actually, and I mentioned this to start the show, I like the fact, and I gave you credit too. I mean, especially now during the quarantine, I mean, you're making 1,000 phone calls a day trying to figure out who the Giants are going to take. You thought it could be, you know, potentially worse. I got to be honest. I love the fact that no one really had any idea that Andrew Thomas was going to be the fourth overall pick. How about you?
I don't think that's true. I mean, ask Dave and Chris. I mean, I was sending them texts for several days. I heard it was either Wirfs or Thomas. I mean, I put out before the draft, Wirfs or Thomas, I thought it was. So I really don't think that's the case. It just depends. The thing is that during the draft process, I don't even think teams need to be deceptive, right? Because there's so many opinions that your mind's just going to get scrambled if you search around enough, right? You listen to enough people, and really, mostly what mock drafting is people putting their best educated guesses, right? And looking at, and so people who don't talk to anybody really within the Giants or, you know, that are connected to the Giants, they're just going and they're looking at traits, their rankings, where you kind of, the range you put a guy in the team's needs, and they marry it together. And there's so many opinions out there that you can just get your head scrambled on what the team's intentions really are.
Jordan, I know that the Giants are going to present this pick as an organizational decision, but do we know, you know, who had more input in terms of this being the direction that they went in? Was it Dave Gettleman or was it Joe Judge, their new head coach?
Yeah, here's what I think about that. I think that Dave Gettleman has the ultimate say still when it comes to who they're going to pick. I mean, he's the general manager. If he didn't, he would be, what's he doing really at this point, right? But Joe Judge's influence, you know, his fingers are all over this stuff. I mean, if you think about it, this might not have been Dave Gettleman's pick last year. This pick in particular has a lot to do with the offense that they're going to run. With Joe Judge having people that he knows, including the Georgia coach, Kirby Smart, that he's reaching out to, that he's talking to, because he has those personal relationships with these guys. So, and knowing him pretty well, at least, you know, well in regards to knowing someone for, you know, about 3 or 4 months, you could tell. I mean, talk to him for one sit down, and you'll see the kind of personality that Joe Judge has. He is a strong personality. He's not going to get run over. He's not going to get railroaded. He's going to express his opinion and make his opinion known very loudly. So he has a lot of say, and probably, I think I could say this pretty confidently, he has more say than the previous coaches in regards to personnel.
Jordan Renan with us here, 98.7 ESPN. So at some point, he's going to wind up Thomas.
Hold on. Can I amend that for a second? And I'm talking just the last two coaches. I'm not talking about Coughlin before that. I'm talking about McAdoo and Shermer in regards to his power over more than.
Oh, sure. Yeah, yeah. We got you. We got you.
Okay. All right. So let me get back to my question, Jordan. So we know at some point Andrew Thomas is going to be the left tackle for this team. My question is, could you see him stepping in as the left tackle right away and Solder moving out to right tackle?
Yeah. I mean, at the end of the conference call yesterday, I was specifically asked, so where do you plan on starting Andrew Thomas? And Joe Judge went on this little, you know, we're going to have everybody compete. You know, they're going to play on the right and left side, blah, blah, blah. And I said, well, I'm interpreting that as you're going to have all these guys compete. You're going to have him. You're going to start Andrew Thomas playing both the right and the left before you decide. Am I right about that? Before you decide where he's going to land. And he said, yes, that goes for all our tackles. So that means Nate Solder as well. So he's basically going to throw them into a pot, try every combination, I believe, early, and then decide, okay, this is our best option of where to go. Nick Gates will be in that mix. Cameron Fleming will be in that mix. And, you know, the best two guys of what they think is their best option. I mean, I'd be stunned if that best option did not include Andrew Thomas at this point because they have such a heavy investment in him right now. But, yeah, they're going to throw them into a pot and see what happens. So I think Nate Solder as a right tackle or not on the roster at all.
Really?
Can't be discounted. You can't discount it at this point. I mean, I know they already paid him $3 million, and it's unlikely, but I wouldn't discount it at all. If they decide he's not one of their two best starting options, are they really going to continue down that road? I mean, they could at least save some money.
That was a spicy take. Hey, Jordan Renan joins us here on the show.
Very
a couple
spicy.
Things. I try to give you a compliment first, and then you completely poo-poo the point. And second of all, I mean, I got you texting. What, did you lose my number? What's going on? My cell phone broken? I mean, you're texting back and forth with Dave and Canty. I'm not getting any of these updates. You know, what are we doing
here? Looking. I didn't have your number. I don't have your number in my phone.
Cool.
It's not in my phone.
Oh, we got to rectify that. All right, here's the question, because a lot of people are asking it.
Go ahead.
Well, let's fix that. Let's fix that, because you know how much I bust your chops, but you know how much I love you.
Appreciate
was it ever at all? Was it ever at all close? I know the Giants were trying to trade back. Was there any offers? Was it ever all close or no?
I think they were optimistic as the morning wore on that they might be able to do something with maybe the Jaguars, but as it went along, I just think they realized that there was nothing going to be there. I mean, the Dolphins and the Chargers, they played it really well. I mean, you have to give them credit. The Lions tried desperately to try and make a bidding war for their pick, and they couldn't make it happen. So once that's the case, the Giants are really stuck, right? I mean, the Lions even tried to get the Jaguars' name in there. I mean, there was just nothing that was teams were dying to move up for. So because, look, the Dolphins stayed where they were, right? And they got the guy they wanted in Tua. The Chargers stayed where they were, and they got their guy in Herbert. So it was a massive game of chicken going on, and those were the two winners. You know who the two losers were? The Lions and the Giants, because they couldn't get anybody to trade up. So I don't think it was a possibility. Now, what's the next thing they could do to try to add more picks? Potentially move today's second-round pick, number 36, just fourth overall in the second round, has value. The Giants pick 36 and 99 right now. 63-pick gap. That's huge, okay? This team has a lot of needs. It would befit them to be able to move back a little bit, add some more picks potentially in these middle rounds.
So, Jordan, let's dig into that a little bit. Going into day two, what are the positions of needs for the Giants, and what are the specific players that you've heard them potentially targeting?
Yeah, well, one of them is center. We know that, you know, John Jalapio, who started last year, he is not signed right now. He tore his Achilles in week 17. So that is clearly a position they spent a lot of time on in this pre-draft process. Matt Hennessy is a guy I would keep my eyes open for somewhere in the second round. Maybe it's at the top of the second round. Maybe they're able to move back a little bit, add some more picks. I think that's kind of his range. His range is the second round. And you look at Zach Bourn, a linebacker from Wisconsin, another player I would definitely keep my eyes on. And then really when you look at it, the way the second round works a lot of times, remember Landon Collins? So basically the Giants didn't think they were going to draft Landon Collins. They didn't think they had any shot at Landon Collins. But he fell out of the first round. So they moved up from their pick in the second round. They moved up to the top pick of the second round and took Landon Collins because they had a first round grade on him. So if there are any players that had a first-round grade for the Giants, and they didn't end up getting picked last night, and they drop into the second round, if they stay at 36, those are the guys that I would expect them to target. Don't be surprised if Gross Matos from Penn State, because look, edge rusher, complete position of need, right? So, I mean, that's a clear position of need. So Gross Matos is a guy I would absolutely keep my eye on, and zero safeties were picked last night, right?
Mm-hmm.
None. That's a position the Giants need. Who is their top-ranked safety? Who do they view as potential fits? Antoine Winfield is a guy I would keep my eye on. I think, or I know, what the Giants would like is they want to have speed in that secondary. And I know people say McKinney from Alabama, he dropped, but one of the reasons he did drop is because of that speed. So I think they're looking for a speedy guy at the back, sort of a guy that is in that free safety-type mold. And I think Antoine Winfield Jr., if he could play the slot as well, would be a guy that you should keep your eye on as well.
Jordan Renan with us here, 98.7 ESPN. Oh, we know they tried to trade out of the four spot, and they couldn't. Do you think it'll be easier if they want to trade back from 36 to be able to do that tonight than it was to potentially do it from four?
I think so, because I think what you can do, right, they could probably move back a few spots, move back, and then they can keep moving around is what I'm trying to say, right? You could drop down from 36 to 42 and then move back again and use some of your late round picks, because they do have late round picks, right? So you throw in some fifth, sixth, seventh, whatever, and you keep trying to move around and maneuver around. If they're flexible enough, now we know this is not Dave Gettleman's specialty. He has never traded down in the draft, but we're really going to see, I think, how influential as Joe Judge? Well, this is where, to me, it's really going to show is their ability or desire to really move around here in on day two in particular, right? Can they really – can they get three picks out of today, right? Like let's say right now they're, what, 36 and 99.
Right.
Can they get, like, somehow, you know, 50 and 80 to go with 99? I think that would be the goal, and that's the kind of, you know, the kind of thing. I mean, Bill Belichick, heck, he traded out of the first round yesterday, right? I mean, nobody makes more trades than Bill Belichick, so I think Joe Judge would like to operate that way in regards to adding picks, so I think that would be I think there's a good chance that happens today.
All right, Jordan, last one from me. I mean, one of the greatest trades in the history of the New York Giants/Jets.
God, here we go.
What's going to happen with this Leonard Williams grievance?
I mean, it's hard pressed for me to imagine he wins, right? Because let's be honest. You know, think about last year. He had a 50-year option. He was listed as a defensive tackle. He wanted to be listed as a defensive end. Guess what? He wasn't. So the likelihood is, again, it's not going to happen. I know they might. Their argument is probably going to be he's a 3-4 defensive end in the Giants system. He's literally a defensive end. But most of his snaps are in a more traditional defensive tackle position. It's really hard to imagine that he's going to win it. And look, the Giants' goal still here is to try and reach a long-term deal. So I don't know if they can because, heck, the guy's guaranteed $16 million up to and potentially up to $18 million. Right, he had half a sack last year. $18 million. That's a easy starting point for the agent. Look, we're making $18 million this year. You know, he could, you know, poop his pants next year.
Wow.
and do nothing and get zero sacks and still get another $6 million. So right from the get go, that's basically he's guaranteed almost what $22 million by doing nothing right now. All he has to do is go on the field, step on the field, and play. Doesn't even have to play well. Right? Because 16, and I'm going to the low end this year, 16 this year is already guaranteed if once he signs that tender. Okay? He could play terribly, get a one-year $6 million deal next year or something, right, which isn't even good. And so that's $22 million that's going to be in his pocket. So any guarantee is going to have to start with a number way bigger than that to make him happy. And that doesn't even seem realistic, to be honest with you.
It's the gift that keeps on giving.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. All right. And, of course,
I mean,
you had to bring it up.
I mean, you got to think about it. Think about it. That number he has right now is huge. I mean, $16 or $18 million.
Yeah, no, we know.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah, no, we know. We're fully well aware of what's going on there. All right, Jordan, listen. Why do you have to do that? We appreciate
Dave,
you.
What's gonna be going through your head as the Jets step up for that pick today?
I hope that guy's the worst player in the history of football.
No, stop it.
I'm not kidding. What do you want me to lie to you? I hope that guy is the Eric Flowers of the third round. I just hope he's an absolute walking disaster.
I heard somebody say like that player is going to be compared to Leonard Williams, but that's not even fair. Like you can't.
He's going to be a tenth of the price of Leonard Williams.
One guy's getting paid $16 million. The other guy's getting paid $1 million. There's a $15 million difference between those two players. $15 million.
Yeah, I hope the Jets forget to make the pick. I hope they their Wi-Fi goes out.
That's the only way you can feel good about it, pretty much today, if they don't make the pick.
All right, Jordan, I'll text you a lot later. I know we have each other's numbers, and I'll definitely be in touch as much as humanly
right,
possible. Thanks, as always.
How about you do me a favor? You start a text thread and make sure Rick is on it this time.
Oh,
now we're talking.
If Rick gives the green light, that's fair.
Green light. I'm giving it. Green light. Okay. I want Jordan as a part of my life.
Okay. Well, I will do that.
How many times is he going to text me?
It could be a lot. Now, I hope that he doesn't ask you questions like he did on the show today, that he raises a level of question. I hope. I apologize for that, Jordan.
No. I love Rick. It was great. Worked out well.
Yeah, good. You're a good teammate. All right. We'll talk to you, bud.
All right. Speak to you later, guys.
All right, that of course is Jordan on. So you're gonna just hammer this guy with questions, aren't you?
No, I'm not gonna hammer him. But it'd be nice if I do have a question or just chat, like, hey, how's things going? How you holding up? How's the hair look? Like things like I would try to give him a compliment. I asked the question in order to give him a compliment, and he completely poo pooed it.
Let's be honest, though, Rico. You know you're going to terrorize Jordan Renan, right? Yeah. You know that's going to happen.
Oh, yeah, depending on the mood. Yeah, I mean, depending on my mood, if I need a quick, yeah.
No,
yeah,
not depending on your mood. More often than not, when you reach out to communicate with Jordan, it would be taking a shot at him.
Why?
I don't know why. I mean, why ask why? I mean, you know me long enough. I don't know. I can't explain it.
Like trying to explain why Dave is this crazed Giants fan.
Maybe it's my upbringing.
It's unexplainable.
Yeah.
I mean, you get raised by Mickey Rourke, Graham, and crazy things happen.
I'm not comfortable with that at all.
I'm so uncomfortable with you calling really? Your mother that.
I'm not even a little bit. I'm not going to pretend I'm comfortable. It makes me squirm every time you say it, and I will not accept it. On her behalf, I will not accept it.
She knows it. She knows it. She loves it.
I'm sure she loves it.
He loves it.
You
loves
call,
it.
You call your mother star. Names of a disfigured-looking actor, and you're saying I'm sure she loves it?
Oh, that's your opinion that he looks disfigured. I mean, is
everyone's opinion. Chris, do you think that Mickey Rourke looks disfigured?
Yes, Mickey Rourke is disfigured. Didn't need a lot of makeup for the movie The Wrestler.
No.
Cheryl was great in that movie. A.K.A. Trapzilla.
Oh, my God. By the way, Chris, I watched The End of the Hunters last night. I told you
it was a little bit of a twist, wasn't it?
No, that was not a little bit of a twist. The I mean, wolf. That was unbelievable.
The wolf. Yeah. Yeah, that was a good one.
I had to go right on the internet to find out when season two is coming out, just to find out they haven't even renewed yet. And there's no guarantee there's going to be a season two.
Okay, Dave, so here's your weekend assignment when you're not watching the NFL draft or The Last Dance. What you need to do is finish Ozark and then compare the endings of both season series.
I'm going to start Ozark.
Which one has the bigger twist at the end?
So you're telling me that the twist of Ozark is comparable to what we saw at the end of Hunters?
My humble opinion. Now, I know I'm not any Gordon Damer, but that's just my opinion. I think they're very close. I'd probably give the edge to the Hunters, but, I mean, the twist at the end of Ozarks is pretty amazing.
Wow. You've piqued my interest. Now, Rick, at some point you're going to watch Hunters, right? It is unbelievable.
Yeah, at some point I have no choice. See, I haven't even seen it yet, and I'll say this just because I know you well enough, is that once you get through Ozarks, you'll think that, and I haven't even seen The Hunters yet, that the twist in The Hunters is probably better than the twist in Ozark.
I mean, you ever have you watch a show and you watch it before bed, and then when you're done, the goal is to go to sleep, but it's so gripping that you just can't? That's what I had last night. It's like 1:45. I watch it, and I spend the next 20 minutes. I'm doing research. Was this guy real?
It's a good show.
It's unbelievable.
It's a good show, yeah.
It's really unbelievable. Been a while with one of our favorites, and that, of course, is Rich Cimini. Good afternoon, Rich. How are you?
Gentlemen, how's it going? Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. All right, so you know where we want to have this conversation start and probably finish, and that is with the Jets' first-round pick of Mekhi Becton. Before we start to ask the pointed questions about him, about the board, about all those things, give us your overview of Becton to the Jets at 11 last night.
Yeah, I liked it. I mean, he's a guy I talked to at least a half a dozen personnel people around the league, and I took a consensus. I polled each one of them. And, in fact, Jordan Renan and I did a pretty extensive survey of about 12 people around the league, and he came in, I think it was first or second among the offensive tackles. So he's a really high upside, just a massive guy, I think. There was the Jets wouldn't say where they would use him, left or right tackle. My understanding is that he is their left tackle. He is going to be Sam Darnold's blindside protector for what they hope will be a 10-year career and plus. So I thought it was really good, a good choice at that position at 11.
So, Rich, no concern at all. I know Joe Douglas kind of addressed the flag drug test at the combine. No concern for you there with that?
Sure, it's a concern. Yeah, I mean, it's a concern. Look, the league has loosened its rules under the new CBA, so it's not as big a concern as it would be in the past. But Joe Douglas, when we spoke to him last night, he admitted that it was, quote, a red flag that went up. And so he spent a long time on Wednesday, just him and Mekhi talking, one-on-one. And, he asked them about that, and they came away convinced that this was not an issue, just an isolated incident. When we talked to Becton last night on our Zoom call, he called it a young mistake, a one-time mistake that will never happen again. I think it speaks more to
just poor decision making. I mean, every one of these players knows they're going to get tested at the combine. So why on earth would you do something to jeopardize that test before the combine? So they investigated it thoroughly, and, you know, they were obviously convinced that it was okay to take them at 11.
Rich, I know we all speculated that offensive tackle would be the direction that they went with the 11th overall pick. It fits in the theme of what Joe Douglas has been doing all offseason with trying to upgrade that offensive line. That being said, they did sign George Fant, an offensive tackle from the Seattle Seahawks. Will there be an open competition at left tackle, or will Becton be the guy day one?
Well, I think, you know, when you draft a guy that high, Chris, I mean, he's got to start for you. I mean, I would think Becton is going to be their left tackle on opening day. And now George Fant, the thing about him, he does have position flexibility, so he could move to right tackle. Now, I think I just looked it up before. I think he's taken about 100 snaps in actual games at right tackle in his career. So I think they're going to put Fant at right tackle. I mean, the guy's making $9 million this year. You can't keep Fant on the bench. You know, what happens to Chuma Adoga? Look, he's a good swing tackle for them now. He can play right tackle. He could go to left tackle in a pinch. But, you know, I think Fant and Becton are your two starting tackles.
Rich, when you did the whole breakdown of the offensive lineman with Jordan Renan, what were the, specifically on Becton, the strengths and weaknesses that the pro personnel guys around the league had to say about him?
Well, the strengths were just a massive run blocker, can push people away, you know, really, really good, you know, just in controlling the line of scrimmage. I talked to one guy, Brian Baldinger, a former offensive lineman from the NFL Network. He goes, getting around him is like orbiting the sun. So good in pass protection, although I saw some analytics, you know, from Pro Football Focus. They said, you know, a lot of his pass protection was camouflaged by the fact that they used a lot of play action and screens at Louisville. And there was some thought that when he was in really obvious passing situation and had to pass set against a rusher, that his stats weren't as good. So that was maybe a little bit of a concern. And the other concern, just from talking to scouts, they refer to it as football character. You know, maybe a little laziness with work ethic. The thought there being that, you know, things came so easy to him in college that maybe that's why he slacked off a little bit. And of course the weight has to be a little bit of a concern when you're, you know, I always remember a quote from Bill Parcells, and maybe Chris can speak to this. You know, when guys are that big, you know, 360, you know, Parcells used to say, you know, he's one biscuit away from 400. So,
yep.
You know, his weight has gone up to about 390. So that's something to be concerned about. But I think the Jets feel that once he gets with the team nutritionist and gets on an NFL-style program, that he'll be okay with that.
Rich, I don't know if you can answer this or not. If anyone could, it would be you. Do you get the feeling, after speaking to whoever you spoke to, that Becton was number one on their board as far as tackle was concerned, or do you get the feeling that it might have been someone else?
Yeah, we asked Joe Douglas that, and he wouldn't say. Usually when someone doesn't say, it means he wasn't. So I do know this. I think it was a no-brainer for them at 11 because Tristan Wirfs was still available. I think some people were surprised by that. The Jets clearly had Becton over Wirfs. You know, they just felt that Wirfs was a right tackle, possibly a guard, whereas Becton had more positional value because he was a left tackle. Now, Jedrick Wills, you know, when we talked the other, I had Wills in my mock draft because I thought it would be flip-flopped. I thought Cleveland would take Becton and the Jets would take Wills. If Wills had been available, I think it would have been a very close discussion between Becton and Wills. They were rated that closely on the Jets draft board. But to say, I think maybe Andrew Thomas was number one on the Jets board, I'm not totally sure about that. But very, very closely rated between Wills and Becton.
Rich, where are the Jets going to turn their focus at on day two? They've got the 48th pick in the second round. That's their next pick. What positions or what specific players do you think that they'll be looking at?
Wide receiver and corner, I think, would probably be the two obvious picks here in the second round. They're at 48. I think what you see sometimes in the second round, teams start targeting players, and so you might see some movement in terms of going up and down. There's still a really good bunch of receivers left. I think that would be the most obvious choice. You know, they had their choice of any receiver in the draft last night, and they opted to go offensive line, which I thought was the right move. But now they're looking at Michael Pittman from USC, T. Higgins from Clemson. I think one or both could be there. Laviska Shenault from Colorado is a guy that they've done a lot of homework on. He could be available at 48. So I think the receiver, Denzel Mims from Baylor, the big kid from Baylor, who really reminds me of another Robbie Anderson, like a really tall, slender
kid. He can run.
Really good speed. Yeah, I mean, the kid can fly. So I think they'll have their choice of multiple receivers at 48.
You think we see them, and Rich Cimini with us here, 98.7 ESPN, you think we're done with the offensive line now, or do you think we could see another offensive lineman taken off the board for the Jets today?
Oh, yeah, today, it would surprise me if they did it in the second or third rounds. I mean, then you're talking, I mean, there's been some talk about Hennessy, the kid from Temple. You know, his brother, you know, is a Jets long snapper. I think he's a really good player, probably will go in the second round, can be center or guard. But the Jets have actually about 9 offensive linemen now. You know, that they're pretty deep for a change. You know, they have a pretty good starting five and some good depth. It would surprise me a lot if they took one today. Now, maybe in the third day they take a guy, but I think they have other more pressing needs right now.
All right, Rich, so you mentioned wide receiver, you mentioned corner. You know, once we address those two positions, what else do you feel like the Jets need to get accomplished here in the next couple of days?
Well, I mean, of course, the edge rusher. I mean, like, you could have asked me that question 10 interviews ago, like from 10 years ago, and I would have said the same thing. You know, it's funny. I was talking to John Abraham on the phone because everyone says, well, the Jets haven't had, like, a great edge rusher since John Abraham in 2004, 2005. And I talked to Abraham a couple of weeks ago, and I mentioned that to him. I said, Jet fans remember you that way, and he was quite flattered. And he goes, actually, he does follow the Jets still from down in Atlanta. And he does think they have some talented players on defense, but they don't have any young John Abrahams. And so they need a speed rusher. They're so hard to find. The kid from Charlotte, believe it or not, Alex Highsmith is considered a sleeper, probably about a third or fourth round pick, you know, with real upside as an edge rusher, maybe a guy to keep an eye on.
Rich, last question for me. Do we know what Sam Darnold has going on with the virtual off seasons, and you know, is there going to be participation from him in that program if the Jets are doing such a program? Is he contacting his receivers? Do you have any updates on that front?
Well, I really can't do anything, Chris. I mean, they start on the 27th with their virtual off season. So basically it's just sitting in front of your laptop for a couple of hours listening to Adam Gase and Greg Williams installed the offense and defense. So I believe Sam is sequestered at his home in Southern California. You know, you probably read it. I mean, he's done some workouts with Josh Allen, the Bills quarterback, and Kyle Allen, the Panthers. Well, actually, not Panthers, now Redskins. Those are two of his closest friends. They've been working out there with Jordan Palmer. I assume they're social distancing while they're working out. I don't know how that's going, but that's what he's doing, but he can't like meet with any, you know, really not supposed to meet with any of his teammates.
All right, Rich, last one, and then we'll let you run, and as always, appreciate the time. And any update, any feel for what's going to happen with Jamal Adams here? Are you now at the point where you think they're going to sign him to a long-term deal or let this play out for another year or trade him at some point this weekend? Or what's your thought on Jamal?
Well, I think the ship has sailed for this weekend. I mean, what would they trade him for now? I mean,
just for next year, right?
Yeah, I mean, at that point, I mean, they can't get a first rounder anymore because we've been through that. So I think at this point, I think the chances of him getting moved this weekend are about 0.5%. I don't think they want to trade him. I think they really want to keep him long term. And now Jamal wants it. You know, a pretty hefty contract. I think he wants to be the highest paid player on the team. And so this is going to be a long, drawn-out process. This is not going to happen quickly. And I think there could be some acrimony down the road a little bit. So I think you'll be asking me these questions about Jamal when they're reporting to training camp, if they're reporting to training camp.
Yeah. Well, I was hoping that they'd have something wrapped up, but at least it'll be good content for us when we talk to you down the road.
Yeah, Jamal's always good for content, and, you know, he's not shy about expressing his opinions, so I think we'll have a story here for a while.
All right. Rich, we appreciate it. Have a good weekend, and I'm sure we'll hear you on the station a bunch on 98.7. Good stuff.
Thanks, guys. Take care.
All right, there you have it. That is Rich Cimini. So, says the Jets probably didn't have Mekhi Becton as the number one offensive lineman, but certainly had him at worst was number three, because they let Wirfs go by and they took Becton. So again, Rich is pretty high on the pick, and I think most people are pretty high on this pick.
Yeah, especially the fact that it's Joe Douglas. I mean, you know where he comes from, who he's learned from. I mean, the position that he played. I mean, realizing that he made a commitment to Sam Darnold, and more importantly, Sam Darnold's parents, that he was going to protect the kid. I mean, that's, if you're going to get the best out of him, I understand that we need weapons. I mean, who cares how many weapons you have if you can't protect the quarterback? So, I mean, get that taken care of and, you know, coach this kid up, because there are, I mean, there are some things that need to be cleaned up. He's not a finished prospect by any means. So coach him up and, you know, hopefully he gets to the ceiling that everyone keeps talking about.
Yeah, I mean, I guess you have to be, you know, optimistic about it because they addressed a position of need. They didn't have a true left tackle. They needed to go out and find somebody that could do that job. And they saw Becton do that job last year. So they felt comfortable enough with the tape to go with him over Tristan Wirfs. So everybody's got, you know, their opinion on who they think the better prospect or the better projection at the tackle position is in the NFL. But listen, you can't criticize Joe Douglas for deciding that he was going to continue to invest in the offensive line, because ultimately the investment in the offensive line is an investment in your young quarterback's development. So we knew that that was the direction that the Jets probably should go in. I probably would have had a hard time passing on Jerry Jeudy, but I still like the pick of going with Mekhi Becton.
We'll go through the first round in a moment. We haven't talked about our mock drafts at all, on the show, not even a little bit today. Haven't even brought it up yet. Chris, you did nicely with 5 points.
It was 5 points. I mean, I felt like I should have got a point for having Okuda with the Detroit Lions, but because I had it at the fifth slot and at the third slot, I missed on that one.
So you got five. Rick, I understand your hesitation with doing it now yesterday. You had 3 points.
Yeah, I overanalyzed. I mean, I feel like I should have won period just because I had Tua going to Miami and neither of you guys had Tua going to Miami. So, I mean,
right,
I should
that was
probably
good
for get
one point
for
of the three that you, so that was the only other one you hit outside of Burrow and Young, which were really layups. And then, the winner of our show was me with, 6 points, and I hit the Jets with Becton for a 2-point play.
What you want, a cookie?
I'll take the cookie.
Yeah, exactly right. I mean, you want a cookie? What would you like?
Yes.
I mean, we had nothing on the line. I mean, the bigger story is the fact that, you know, it looks like Chris Carlin's buying everyone dinner. I mean, that's
nice.
Really, the main takeaway.
What did he get? He got three?
I believe he got 3 points, yeah.
Yeah, he didn't.
This is what happens,
well,
though. I mean, this is, you do these mock drafts, you try to talk to a million different people, you do 600 of these, and then, you know, you hear chaos, 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 and then, I mean, you're sitting there watching.
It couldn't go
chalk.
More chalk, right?
Yeah, so probably the first mock draft that you probably did before you listened to everybody was probably the one that was closest to being right.
Absolutely. Although I would not have, I don't think I ever would have had the Giants taking Thomas at 4.
No, I don't think so either. That wasn't
a
name
so long ago
that we heard.
Was he was going to be the first offensive lineman off the board.
Yeah, plus everyone that we talked to, I mean, I don't know what Jordan was texting you, but I mean, every draft I saw him do or every draft that was being done, it was either Simmons or if you were on the side of offensive linemen, it was Wills or Wirfs. It wasn't Thomas, but hey, I'm glad. Now, listen, you should be happy that no one knew.
I am. And I really believe that's a Joe Judge kind of mandate that, you know, I'm done. I mean, everyone knew Barkley. Everyone. He was touched by the hand of God, he told us. And then, as surprising as Daniel Jones was, it wasn't all that surprising, right? I remember doing the show last year, the day of the draft, saying, I know what they're going to do. They're going to take Daniel Jones 6th overall. So I'm pleased that you didn't know exactly what the Giants were going to do with the 4th overall selection.
No, I guess that is good that they kind of hold their cards close to the vest. But the one thing I will say, and the one thing that I'm excited about seeing a lot more of, is Joe Judge's influence on the organization. Because it's clear throughout the pre-draft process that he was influential in terms of keeping their plans as quiet as possible and in the direction that they decided to go with Andrew Thomas. Like, they actually went for somebody that has production on the field, that did it at a high level in a very competitive conference. I'm sure that Joe Judge was able to get insight from Kirby Smart because they have a relationship going back to Alabama. So you feel good that your new head coach and the experience that he's bringing to the table is paying early dividends. You're getting a return on that just from his insight on the players that you were potentially interested in. And the fact that you went with Andrew Thomas, that just leads me to believe that he's really, really comfortable with this team building toward, you know, trying to be an offensive-oriented squad with Daniel Jones in the middle of it. So I feel good about Joe Judge in terms of our early evaluations of him. I mean, this is his first draft pick, and the fact that he decided he wanted to build it with Andrew Thomas, a high-character guy and a guy that was productive for 3 years in the SEC, I feel good about that.
And Jordan, I thought, brought up something interesting earlier today when he joined us in the 11 o'clock hour, and that was, you know, Belichick is so big on trading back and acquiring more picks, and the Giants could really use that. Do they do that tonight? I mean, 36 could potentially be a valuable pick. So do you get, you know, a later second and a third round pick? Do you wind up with a little bit more ammunition? And I think it'll be interesting. And if they do that, then Rick, for me, it really starts to define that Judge is heavily involved with this draft. I think he is anyway, but it would really kind of hammer home that point.
Yeah, but I think they'd like to. I mean, I think that Dave Gettleman and Joe Judge would like to trade back from four. I mean, you have to have someone that's willing to jump up and make the trade with you. I mean, when you look at the landscape of the NFL draft period, I mean, you usually find that you get a lot less swings and misses in the second and third rounds. So this is where a lot of teams do, you know, do the real work. So yeah, I mean, you'd love to do that. Going from, I mean, where you're at in the second round, your next pick's not till 99.
99. It's a
and how many
right?
different positions that you still need to address, especially
you need everything.
It would have been at 68 had it not been for
and 99
a trade.
Yeah, I wonder who the Jets going to take at 68.
Oh, I hope he's the worst. Really, I hope they redraft Christian Hackenberg at 68.
See why? Well, I mean, why?
All you do is sit here and give me torturous moments on, oh, that trade was awful. How about that trade? That was some trade. You bring it up to everybody
that
joins us.
Listen, I don't care what kind of fan you were, period. If we just take our fandom out of it, period, and we're just talking football, you can't explain away that it was a terrible trade.
I know that, but you make sure to bring it up at every conceivable moment with anybody that joins us.
But it's topical, like Dave. We're talking about it being a third round pick at the top of the third round, and the third round is going to be tonight.
That's all I got, Dave.
So it's relevant.
That's all I got.
It's very relevant. It's always relevant.
So he can bring it up. It's fair to bring it up today.
Kim Mulkey's in the studio. Like, Kim, what do you think about the...
I love Kim Mulkey. She was the best.
Yeah, she's terrific.
She was the best.
By the way, your favorite coach retired the other day. You see that?
I know. I did see that.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a long run. What was she, 33 years?
33 years in Notre Dame, yeah.
One of the best names in the history of sports, by the way.
Muffet McGraw, yeah.
Oh, little Muffet. Little Miss Muffet.
God.
Would you like, let me ask you a question, because we're going to get to the football frenzy here in the next segment.
Yeah.
Would you like the hot take now? Would you like me to save it? Or would you like the clip from The Last Dance that would fit perfectly into the Dave Rothenberg documentary? What would you like?
Chris, I'll work in conjunction with you. I'd like to hear the clip that would play into the documentary.
Let's do it.
All right. So set it up. Go ahead.
Okay, let me set it up. So we're sitting down. You know, Chris and I go back and forth. We're being interviewed. You know, Chris says a couple things about Dave. I say a couple things about Dave. And then just unbeknownst to anyone, Dave Rothenberg, we don't even realize this because just Dave is the most interesting man on the planet. Dave Rothenberg actually has had a relationship for a long time with one Michael Jeffrey Jordan. And when asked about Dave Rothenberg, this is what MJ had to say.
You let this dude go to vacation, we're not going to see him. You let him go to Vegas, we definitely not going to see him.
it's true. Vegas is a wild city. I've been there two times. The first time went for four nights, I think, and I'm not exaggerating, I think we slept for 12 hours. In total, 12 hours. Then the second time I went for work, and I've told you the story, where we were doing the show right on the edge of the casino. We had a taped interview with George Foreman. I said, come get me when there's 90 seconds left in the interview, and I'll come back. I was gambling like crazy at the blackjack table. And we, instead of me coming back and closing the segment, we had to go straight to break because I was in the midst of a really bad run, and I wanted to try to turn that around.
But that was a different Dave Rothenberg, though, right? You've got more restraint now, correct? So let me ask you this, Dave.
Mm-hmm.
If the Giants are in the Super Bowl and it happens to be in Vegas and somebody were to give you tickets, would you go?
Yes.
You would go?
Yes.
and you're fully confident that you would be able to control yourself when you're out there?
No, but I would absolutely go. 100%. I might just fly in morning of.
Morning of.
I might.
Just so there's no temptation.
Or stay like three. I might just fly out to L.A. and the morning of just drive into the game, watch the Giants win the Super Bowl, and go right back to L.A.
But here's the thing. If they win the game, then you're going to want to celebrate, and you're not going to want to drive 5 hours back to L.A. to do it.
Yeah, but that's a good point. I think I could probably celebrate without getting myself into gambling trouble.
Yeah, but if your team wins the Super Bowl, could your luck be any better?
So you're pushing me to the table?
No, I'm not pushing you to the table. I'm just saying. Just saying the mentality.
Is that what he was doing? Couldn't you see him like, Dave, it doesn't get any better than this. Your team just won the Super Bowl. You're in Vegas. Go, run free.
You pushing me?
He's pushing me to the tables.
Oh, man.
I want to see Dave Rothenberg in rare form. That's what I want.
I don't know who he's kidding. He would have to find. I mean, you'd have to go with Sherry. I mean, first and foremost, you'd have to go with Sherry. You'd have to be handcuffed to Sherry.
Yeah.
And I don't know who
you're
kidding.
It'd probably be like a bail bondsman kind of a situation.
Yeah. I mean, that would be the only way it would work. Because otherwise, the second that they win, you'd be naked. You'd be running around the strip. You'd be at the tables immediately. I don't know who you're kidding. First of all, if you flew to Vegas, the second you got off the plane, you'd already start gambling. I mean, you're talking about.
You can gamble in the airport there.
That's what I mean. I mean, yeah. You gambled on the WNBA All-Star game. I mean, we know what you're capable of doing.
I forgot that happened.
That was an easy one, though. The West was dominant. Cheryl Swoops, Tina Thompson, they had a tremendous amount of talent.
Oh, my goodness.
Wow.
You're too much. You are too much.
DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg. Weekdays at 10 on 98.7 ESPN.